Hello and welcome to Enterprise Linux Security, episode 91. And I'm here as always with my good friend Zhao. How you doing?
All good, Jay. As always, pleasure being here with you. As people might have noticed, if you're trying to watch on YouTube, it's an audio-only episode. This is probably just a one-off.
Yeah, this is a one-off. And I'm actually in Myrtle Beach with my girlfriend this week. It's so beautiful down here with all the palm trees. In Michigan, we don't have palm trees, so I feel like I'm in another country every time I come down here, even though I'm not. I guess I didn't get out enough growing up. But anyway, I'm here, and originally we're just going to record it and not upload it. But long story made short, we just decided to hit the button. I'm in a temporary location. Hopefully everything sounds okay by the time everyone else gets a hold of this. A little housekeeping or errata, basically. So the Udemy course, the Linux Essentials course that I just put out, is actually in the business section now. So if you're a business subscriber and you have a business account, you should be able to find it there. A lot of people have been asking me about this. So if you check as of today, you should find it there. But even if you're not a part of the business program, you go to learnlinux.tv, check out the Linux Essentials course. It's linked from there. Just check it out and get certified. And then finally, just want to point everybody to the Learn Linux TV shop. It's been updated. So check it out if you haven't already done so. There's t-shirts, there's backpacks, there's all kinds of things there. So go to merch.learnlinux.tv, and that'll help out the show. You could buy an Enterprise Linux TV shirt, Enterprise Linux Security. Gosh, I can't even talk today. Gosh, Enterprise Linux Security podcast shirt. I guess being in a different location makes me stutter. But we have all kinds of stuff there, so definitely check it out. And today we're going to talk about the shared responsibility model, something that I'm kind of surprised we haven't covered before. We've spoken about it, but we haven't done a dedicated episode on it. So here we have another foundational episode and also a good episode for a new listener to jump onto.
Absolutely. And it's actually very timely. It's not just a foundational episode. It relates, at least in part, with the last episode that was talking about the UniSuper event in Australia, where somebody accidentally deleted an entire organization's cloud deployment from Google, and it managed to delete everything. We're going to be talking about the shared responsibility model, which basically defines the boundaries of who does what when your organization is using cloud computing infrastructure of any kind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So just like you were saying, as a shared responsibility model, and you know, when you subscribe to any service, I'm not just talking about cloud services, I'm talking about, like, you know, someone who's not a computer person like we are, they subscribe to a service, they think, okay, they're going to take care of it for me. Just like you hire a plumber, they're going to take care of your plumbing. You hire a contractor, they're going to do some work on your house. You pay the money, something's done. But this is more of a relationship. And I think that's what everyone needs to understand, especially in cloud. It's a relationship. And that's why we have a shared responsibility model. There's some things that your cloud provider is going to do for you. And there's some things that they expect you to do. For example, and we'll talk about this shortly, they're not going to install your security updates for you. I mean, they can if they have an automated update service that you enable, but even then, you know, you got to make sure that you keep an eye on that, because even if their service breaks and they don't update your system, it's expected that you are going to keep on top of that. So what we'll talk about today is what's expected of you, the administrator, but also what can you, the administrator, expect of your cloud company.
And also, one of the ways that I've seen the shared responsibility model be addressed is that people often just think about it as, who's liable if something breaks? Where can I point my finger if something goes wrong? Is it to somebody from my organization that failed to press the right button or click on the right checkbox or something? Or is the provider that failed to meet my expectations? And that's actually a reductive way of approaching it. It diminishes the value of this shared responsibility model, and it doesn't really translate exactly what it does. For example, Google's model is actually described on their documentation as shared fate, not shared responsibility model. And it's interesting that they phrase it like that, because think about it this way. If your business does well as a customer of a given cloud service provider, then your business value grows. But the cloud provider also benefits. You're more likely to acquire more services, and the value of the cloud provider grows because other organizations might trust it more since it's working fine for you. So this isn't a competition between you and your cloud provider seeing who has to do more things for the service that they're providing you. This isn't a prisoner's dilemma where you're competing with somebody to try to come up with the best way to solve the problem. This is something where both sides of the equation can benefit from. So if you've been around for long enough to have worked in an entirely on-premises installation, the responsibility model there was easy. It's all on you. So you're responsible for ensuring the physical security, for handling the power requirements, the cooling, the reparations that are needed, but also for stuff like operating system installations, for the system maintenance, for configuration, patching, like you mentioned, for any backups that are required, for data storage, all the way to application deployment and configuration. So everything was on you. You weren't sharing responsibility with anybody because there wasn't anybody else involved in the transaction. When we started to move things to the cloud, things started to behave differently and had to be addressed differently. You couldn't just be expected to handle everything when the servers were hosted somewhere. And you might not even know exactly which servers there were. It was impossible to translate exactly what was happening with on-premises stuff when it was moved to the cloud. Now, you might have already started working on it at a place, or your first job might have been already on something touching on the cloud. There's entire generations of sysadmins out there that already started with when this was in place. But there are older sysadmins out there that started before that. And they remember when things happened that way and who had to run down to the data center and press a button because something crashed in the middle of the night or crashed during the day and it had to be fixed immediately. So when that translates to the cloud, things had to change and everybody had to know exactly who was responsible for what.
Exactly. When I first started, if a server came up missing, I have questions. Okay, where did it go? Did someone steal it? Like, check the security cameras. Cloud is so different. You don't have a visual on the server, and it might not be there in the morning like we're going to talk about. Now, before I get back to that, though, I just want to mention, if you have a CTO or some executive that's just not on the up and up about this stuff, this also might be a good episode to point them to, because I think with this episode, yeah, this is for advanced tech people, but it's also for CTOs and anyone that wants to know about security, especially as it pertains to Linux. And this is something that is not just important for the administrator to understand. This is important for your employer to understand, because it's their expectations that need to match the cloud provider, not just yours. And you don't want to be held accountable for something that, isn't part of the responsibility. Now, I'm not trying to say all companies are trying to push their employees in a corner or anything like that. But I do feel it's important for both sides, administrators and management, to both understand what they can expect or should expect from their administrators themselves and also the cloud provider.
And understanding it better than most people do is actually pretty useful for the business side as well. Like you were saying, this isn't just a technical thing. Understanding how the dynamics work between you and your cloud service provider, it's actually important for you to understand where things can be improved and where you can extract more value from the services that you're acquiring from your cloud provider. Not just treating it as if it was an extension of your on-premises stuff. There's more to the cloud than that. And again, take this with a pinch of salt. I've never been a grand proponent of the cloud or a major believer in all the benefits that have been touted in the cloud. I still believe there's a bit of hype involved, but again, that's just my personal view on it. So there's many layers to this, and there are many different things that we can be talking about when we mention the cloud. You have infrastructure as a service, which is basically just moving servers to virtual machines that are hosted on the cloud. So you don't manage the servers directly. You have access to virtual machines that are running on hypervisor managed by your cloud provider. We'll go into the details of each one in a bit. I'm just trying to give an overview of the different aspects of this. In that one, so you're just using VMs that are created for you. You deploy the operating system and everything on top of that, but the VMs are created away from what you see. You're one step removed from that, if you will. then you have platform as a service where you have, for example, where you deploy, for example, applications to existing platforms, like hosting websites on the cloud instance of WordPress, for example, where WordPress itself is maintained and updated by the cloud provider, and you handle the actual website management and creation and design and all of that. And then there's software as a service, where the applications themselves are handled by the cloud provider, and you handle the data and the privileges that you assign to users on that application, but you're essentially touching the cloud just through that application interface, nothing more along the pipeline. And there are differences in the shared responsibility model in each of these cases. For each one, there are different aspects that are handled by you and different things that are handled by the cloud provider. So I guess we can start with the infrastructure as a service, for example. So your cloud service provider responsibilities on infrastructure as a service, IaaS, comprise physical security, which includes protection of the actual physical infrastructure, including the data centers, the hardware, the networking components, like protecting the cables and the switches and all of that, and environmental controls, making sure that everything runs at the adequate temperature, for example. And then it's also their responsibility handling the virtualization layer. Like I said, you handle just the VMs and work directly with the VMs. The hypervisor deploying new hosts, new nodes on to run VMs on, that's for the cloud provider. That's on their end of the responsibility. Any patching and any updates to the hypervisor and to the hosts should be handled by the cloud service provider, not you. You won't even have visibility into those. And then it's also the cloud service provider responsibility to ensure that you have enough computational resources available. If you're creating VMs with a specific number of CPUs, with a specific number of gigs of RAM or hardware, or storage space, it's their responsibility to make sure that you really have access to that. So if they let you create a VM with 5 terabytes of storage, then you need to be able to have 5 terabytes of storage in that VM. One of the tricks that it's often used is scene provisioning, where they actually show you more storage than what's available on the host, and then they'll do some shenanigans behind the scenes. And in some cases, that doesn't work properly, so you'll get weird errors, and it's because they're trying to skirt some responsibilities there. On the other hand, it's the customer's responsibility to install the operating system, to manage the operating system, to deploy patches for the operating system, to deploy the applications that then are running on top of it, to configure them, to secure those applications, to secure the VMs, to make sure that the data is encrypted, that the access to the data is controlled. The backups are on your end as well. The network configuration is on your end. Security of the network traffic, including setting up firewalls and VPNs and intrusion detection and prevention, that's all on the customer side of things.
Yep. And sometimes it's good to think about this, but using an example application, because sometimes you can have an application that can exist in any of these environments. And I'll just randomly choose Nextcloud because I put out a video for that recently. You could buy a physical server, rack it, and install Nextcloud on that server, and then you're responsible for the cooling of the rack, the power supply breaks, you have to replace that, and so on, and you have to also keep up all the updates. Now, if you went with a third-party provider that offers Nextcloud, as a cloud service, in that case, you're signing up for a service. You don't have to install Nextcloud. It's already installed on the other end. They're just giving you access to a Nextcloud server, by subscription. And then you pay them a monthly fee. And then they'll keep it up to date, presumably, as long as they're a good solution provider. They'll keep that up to date for you and you'll pay the fee. But you could also decide to run it in a cloud provider, which is, the main topic here. And now this is where it gets interesting because it's almost like a physical machine where you have to install it and keep it up to date, but it's in someone else's data center. So now you start to get more of a divide because you have to keep Nextcloud up to date since you took the responsibility of wanting to host it yourself and you chose to put it on a cloud provider. You have to use cloud provider tools to keep it up to date. You have to understand the platform. And that's when we start to get into the shared responsibility model when it's in the cloud. Also, if it's not a cloud and if it's just, a platform as a service provider, same difference, there's going to be expectations on both sides. And the key here is that you have to check the documentation for your platform to find out, you know, their version of the shared responsibility model. We're going to give you some generics today, but it's not going to be the same across the board. One provider might do one thing, the other provider might expect you to do that thing. So it's important to understand, specific to your provider, what the shared responsibility model is.
Yeah, and moving on to platform as a service, as you were mentioning, the responsibilities there shift a little. So you're no longer supposed to handle operating system deployment and any middleware deployment. That's all on the cloud service provider responsibility side now. Your responsibilities there is to develop the applications and configure them like you want them to run, and still ensure the data security, still ensure access management to the data, and ensure that the application is receiving the proper updates and all of that. But the operating system now is one level removed again. First, with infrastructure, you had the blank server for lack of a better analogy here. You were given a blank VM where you deployed whatever operating system you want. On platform as a service, you don't have that control anymore. It shifts to the cloud service provider, and you no longer have the ability to deploy a different operating system if you so choose. All of these different layers that slightly shift things from the customer to the cloud service provider, they will offer you obviously less degrees of control because you're touching on different aspects of the stack, but they will also require less effort from you in doing all that. When you were doing all of that on premises, when everything was on your end, it obviously took longer to get the system up and running. If you had to handle everything from racking the server to making sure that it was connected properly to the network and configuring all the ports and making sure that everything was deployed correctly, it obviously took longer. That's one of the advantages of the cloud. If all you want to concern yourself with is just a portion of that process, then yeah, these things and this shared responsibility will work wonders for you. But I don't know. Again, this is my personal bias on the cloud. I always enjoyed having more control over this. I know this is not the specific topic that we're handling. It's not about control and all of that. But these differences in the responsibility, this shifting away of control from the customer, from the end user, to the cloud provider, you lose some of the magic in the process, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah. I do understand you a lot more than you might think. So I get this question a lot in the YouTube videos where, I think someone asked this in the Nextcloud video, as a matter of fact, where someone asked, you know, I could just install a Snap package. Why would I go through the process of installing Apache, PHP, and all of that and build it manually? And it depends on the person and what's important to you. But for me, I like to know what goes into it. I need to know what version of PHP it is, what the libraries are, which libraries are enabled. If I have a Snap package, I know that's not what we're talking about, but there's a parallel Snap package, container, whatever you want to call it. Someone else decided on each and every component. And to be fair, they might have made the best decision and it might very well be the best example. But I want to know what goes into it, especially because, you know, what if there's some kind of side channel attack, you know, library gets poisoned or something like that. I want to keep up to date on that and take that responsibility for myself. But that depends on the person. But I also feel that if you install a container, you really don't learn anything. And I would argue, even if you're using a container to build your own images, because then you could benefit from containers and still know what goes into them. And when it comes to companies bringing this full circle, this does matter, because I've experienced this before, where a company that shall remain nameless wanted to have cloud services. I'm oversummarizing this. And it was I believe it was like a network attached storage, a cloud version of that, just a, you know, file drop. And we were going to have them use this, but they didn't want to use it. And the reason why is because the provider uses AWS on the back end, and the company was a competitor to AWS. So they didn't want anything to do with any machine or anything that had Amazon Linux on it. They were very specific about it. So that disqualified a few services, you know, platform services. that they, you know, it kind of thinned the selection list, and that was important to them. So understanding the components that goes into this is very important. But more to your point, cloud is a tool. You know, you don't go into an auto repair shop and try to fix everything with the same wrench. You need different wrenches, you need different tools. There's a different tool for the job. And usually what I see is this, you know, everyone's all about the cloud. We got to move to the cloud. And that's fine if it does something that you need, but you should always look at it, understanding what the pros are and the cons are. Don't just jump on a bandwagon unless, you know, it's a good bandwagon. You have to check that first.
And going through all the motions of setting stuff up from scratch, you actually learn a lot. And I don't say this is just like personal growth, learning and learning sysadmin skills doing this or whatever job you're doing, or cybersecurity skills in securing the system. I say this as the tribal knowledge that you and your team gain from actually understanding completely how a system was deployed and configured from scratch, from bare metal, if it has to be. That knowledge will actually serve you better through the lifetime of the service and the server than just deploying it somewhere and just hoping that everything is configured like you would like it to be. But again, this was just a tangent, so sorry for that. Going for the last layer that I wanted to address here on the different types of cloud service and shared responsibility models is software as a service. This one, you just touch on the final layer, which is the application layer. You're no longer responsible for the operating system. You're not even familiar with the concept of which VMs or which systems are running your application, or if it's being containerized somewhere. You're just facing the application directly. And even updating the application is on the cloud service provider side of the responsibility model, not yours. On your end, you have to handle, obviously, the data that goes into the application, because that's yours, and you have to ensure that it's properly encrypted and it's properly handled and it has to comply with all the regulations and all of that. And to that, the cloud service provider in that case also has to ensure that it handles correctly all the GDPR requirements for data storage and data relocation, because that will touch on both of you. So it's not just you that has to manage data. Data protection will also has to have some interaction with the cloud provider side. But stuff like managing users on the application, stuff like data input and device security for the devices that touch the application, those are on the customer side. Okay, so this is the latest of this triad of different architectures of cloud services that I would like to talk. There are many other variants. It's like DevOps and DevSecOps and DNEOps and all the weird ops out there. There's also this zoo of different architectures that you can look at for the cloud, and every company wants to create their own and be special. These are the three main ones. And go on.
I was just going to say, so speaking of cloud providers, I feel like this is what I can contribute the most to this episode, because I have a lot of experience. Obviously, I know you do too. But essentially, what I want to talk about is the shared responsibility model a bit deeper, because, and I'm surprised I didn't get into this sooner, the whole cattle versus pets thing, because I think that's kind of a big part of this. It's not the only part of this. I don't want anyone to think that they understand this concept, they understand everything, but it's an important part, because VMs often make up the best, you know, the majority of this. So cattle or pets, basically what that means is your server to be consumed, or is it something that you should care for, consumed or cared for? So when we have a physical machine, you know, many years ago, I should say, because everyone's on cloud, you know, we had to keep it running. Like I said, we have to replace the power supply, or we might have dual power supplies on it or something like that. Replacing hard drives was a common thing, especially in RAID. We've all done that if you started around the time that I did. So obviously that's abstracted in the cloud, but when it's in the cloud, then you have to understand the approach. Now, some cloud providers will, you know, you create a server and, you know, we can reasonably expect it to be there unless something crazy happens, you know, it's going to be there. If it's not, if it's one of the platforms that, you know, doesn't take this or doesn't have that approach, they have the cattle approach, the server might not be there when you wake up. Now, what do you mean by that? You create a server and it might not be there? That doesn't make sense. Some people might be thinking. But the idea is that you have things like auto scaling. So for example, for auto scaling, you have situations where you have more servers that are added on, and they're added on as the service grows and the service needs things. And so for example, if your website has a major sale, then, you know, maybe you're going to have more visitors on that website. So you need more servers to handle the traffic. So if you have auto scaling, it's going to see the load and then spin up more servers behind the load balancer to handle that load. And then when the load dies down, it'll delete servers down to a minimum. So maybe you have a minimum of 3 servers, a maximum of 10. You don't want a, you know, infinite bill, so you have to have a maximum on that. And that way it can scale. So the servers will come and go as the need comes and goes. But a lot of people, when they go to the cloud, they think of it like a standard lift and shift. You have a physical server. I need to install the same application on the virtual server. I need to move my data over there. That's a lift and shift. And, you know, that model, you're coming right from a server that you cared for into a cloud platform where that server can go away. What you need, what the right thing to do on that kind of platform is to have automation in place that'll make sure that a server is running based off an image that you create, that you set it up, a reference server. All the other servers will be based on that. But the problem is, in that model, they could come and go. If you're, if you have the auto healing mentality, then that's fine. If a server, if you go below the minimum, or a server is unhealthy, it fails a health check, then the cloud platform, per your instruction, will delete it and spin up a new one. Now, at this point, servers can come and go, and that's fine. But if you're coming from a, you know, physical mentality, and then you wake up one morning and find your server isn't there, that's a big problem. Now, what it, our last episode, when it, what happened to Unisuper, that is not quite the same thing. That's not, as to my understanding, someone that didn't understand the shared responsibility model. You know, that was just a genuine goof up. That was not that person's fault. So that's not something that's going to happen. Hopefully never again, but that's not really a standard thing. You just have to understand, are the servers, are you supposed to, I would even argue you should probably have auto healing no matter what, because a cloud platform, I mean, somebody could trip over a power cable. You don't even know if their wiring is good in the data center.
And people are in those data centers and people do move between the servers. So yeah, that can happen. Actually, it's an interesting visit. If you ever have the opportunity to visit one of those data centers, don't miss out on that. Anyway, there are a few concepts that I would like to touch on that directly translate to security aspects in the shared responsibility model. First is the identity and access management aspect of this. So the cloud provider usually provides you with tools and frameworks for identity management and authentication and authorization mechanisms. This is the stuff that gives you new tokens for your applications, depending on the layer that you're handling. It's the stuff that lets you create user accounts for other people in your team if you're the administrator. But this is an infrastructure that's set up for you by the cloud service provider. You essentially get an account that has the ability to manage other accounts in their infrastructure, but you don't handle the identity and access management directly. This is provided to you by the cloud service provider. Your responsibility on the identity and access management, regardless of the type of cloud architecture that we talked about, is to configure the policies and manage the user roles and the permissions and ensure that people are using multi-factor authentication by selecting that in the mandatory stuff, and you should. And that is on the customer side. Then there's data encryption. The cloud service provider will offer you the ability to encrypt data in transit and at rest, the major ones, although I believe all of them have some facility for this, along with key management services for that encrypted data. And the customer will decide what to encrypt. If you want to encrypt everything, if you only want to encrypt databases or virtual machines or whatever, and the customer has the ability to control that. Then there's network security. The cloud service provider ensures that the underlying network infrastructure is secure and provides firewalls and provides the DDoS protection. This is something very common on the cloud service provider. It's a facility that they have. And they will give you some type of VPN connection for you to connect your own existing services somewhere else to the stuff that you're deploying on the cloud securely. And then it's the customers, it's on the customer responsibility to actually secure the network communications by making use of those firewalls and making use of those virtual private networks and ensuring that the network architecture is consistent along the way, because it's often possible to set up a VPN connection, making sure that everything is pretty secure, and then open a secondary pathway for traffic for you to connect to a specific service running on the cloud deployment just for management, for example, and not respect the policies that should be in place. Like, everything should go through this channel and this VPN that is using this encryption and these protocols, but then you set something on the side just in case. And then you're essentially shooting yourself on the foot with that. Then there's compliance and auditing. And this is getting more and more relevant as we have new legislation coming up regarding the rights of people to their data and to be forgotten. And you have stuff like GDPR and HIPAA and PCI DSS. And then you have business requirements like audit logs and compliance reports. So the cloud provider will ensure that the services comply with that, and they will give you those logs and those compliance reports for the service side, but it's the customer's responsibility to actually run the things that generate the logs and perform regular audits and make sure that if the cloud provider is storing the data on somewhere that GDPR says that it's fine, that the customer doesn't take that data and then themselves move it somewhere where it shouldn't. You're essentially, again, shooting yourself in the foot. It's really kind of easy to shoot yourself in the foot when you're talking about IT. So if your cloud service provider offers you these facilities, make use of those rather than trying to fight them.
And then, for some reason, I have this picture in my head of these old movies where you have a cowboy shooting at somebody's feet and they have to like dance to avoid the bullets. And that's kind of like what a cloud provider experience is like.
Only in this scenario, you're likely using a flamethrower or something like that that's harder to dodge. The final one is incident response. Your cloud service provider will provide you with incident detection and response tools, and it will notify customers of breaches and vulnerabilities in the infrastructure. And again, the big names all do this. But it's up to you to develop an incident response plan. If your cloud provider tells you, hey, we have indications of malicious traffic reaching your VMs in this and this situation, it's up to you to then take that information and respond to it in a way that's meaningful. If somebody tried to hack into your database or tried to access your confidential data store, it might be interesting for you to look at that again carefully and trying to see if something was actually exfiltrated or changed or something. So again, two sides of that. There's the things that your cloud provider gives you and the abilities that you have through their functionality, and then there's the things that you as a customer actually use and develop and make sure that works correctly.
Another thing I want to make sure that everyone understands is that just because a cloud provider says that they're going to do something for you does not mean they're going to do all of it. And what I mean by that is, or one example of that is updates. So many cloud providers will have a service that you can turn on that will enable automatic updates. That's a great thing to do. But if you compiled Nginx from source, the cloud provider has no idea that you did that, and it's not going to update that for you. If you just, you know, built something outside of the tools of the cloud provider your own way, then you take the responsibility to then update that. Because again, the cloud provider only knows about the things that you've facilitated through their services. So that's just something to keep in mind. You have to know where it ends as well. And another tip I want to give everybody, and this is extremely important. Cloud providers are going to have a root account. Obviously, you should have that turned off. Nobody should be using it. But another aspect of this, especially with AWS, is you'll have account-related emails that'll go to an email address that's associated with that account. For example, if a server, a physical server at AWS, has physical trouble, it's going to tell you that you have two options. You can reboot your VM, or they'll just delete it for you because they're not going to wait to replace hardware that's failing. They're going to just replace it. They'll give you a warning if, you know, it behooves them to do that. But it's up to you to see those emails. Now imagine if AWS is sending you emails, you know, we're going to delete your server, we're going to delete your server, and you're not even getting those messages. And this has happened, and I have seen this, that no one knew to pay attention to those messages, and then their infrastructure is gone. Obviously, there's bigger problems if their infrastructure being gone is a problem. But the point is, you have to understand what the cloud provider does and does not do. Is, you know, even down to the individual bullet points within the thing that they say they'll do, because they still might not catch all the bullet points. So, again, if you're compiling something from source, or you install some kind of a Tomcat app or something like that, it's not going to be updated along with the automatic updates if your cloud provider does that. So you'll have to also make sure that all the software that needs to be updated and the way that you update that software is documented, because that's not going to change even with the cloud provider.
And if you're looking for a good tool for patching your virtual machines on the cloud like you do on premises, TechScare Live Patching Solutions is a very good option for that. I really had to plug that one in. I guess we covered the big points on the shared responsibility model. I really want to go back again one last time to the way that Google described this on their documentation. Shared fate is a great way to describe this model. It's not just shared responsibility. If something breaks, it affects both you and the cloud provider. It looks bad on both of you. So shared fate is a great way to describe this. Kudos to Google for the way that they described this. Yeah. So I guess that's our episode for today. Thank you very much for joining. As always, a pleasure, and we'll see you on the next one.